And it was the aspect of the crowds that was the queerest thing of all. In outward appearance, it was a town in which the wealthy classes had practically ceased to exist. Except for a small number of women and foreigners, there were no well-dressed people at all. Practically everyone wore rough working-class clothes or blue overalls or some variant of the militia uniform. All this was queer and moving. There was much in it that I did not understand. In some ways, I did not even like it. But I recognised it immediately as a state of affairs worth fighting for. Also, I believed that things were as they appeared, that this was really a workers' state, and that the entire bourgeoisie had either fled, been killed, or voluntarily come over to the workers' side. I did not realise that great numbers of well-to-do bourgeois were simply lying low and disguising themselves as proletarians for the time being. Together with all this, there was something of the evil atmosphere of war. The town had a gaunt, untidy look. Roads and buildings were in poor repair. The streets at night were dimly lit for fear of air raids. The shops were mostly shabby and half empty. Meat was scarce and milk practically unobtainable. There was a shortage of coal, sugar and petrol, and a really serious shortage of bread. Even at this period, the bread queues were often hundreds of yards long. Yet so far as one could judge, the people were contented and hopeful. There was no unemployment, and the price of living was still extremely low. You saw very few conspicuously destitute people, and no beggars except the gypsies. Above all, there was a belief in the revolution and the future, a feeling of having suddenly emerged into an era of equality and freedom. Human beings were trying to behave as human beings and not as cogs in the capitalist machine. In the barber shops were anarchist notices. The barbers were mostly anarchists, solemnly explaining that barbers were no longer slaves. In the streets were coloured posters appealing to prostitutes to stop being prostitutes. To anyone from the hard-boiled, sneering civilization of the English-speaking races, there was something rather pathetic in the literalness with which these idealistic Spaniards took the hackneyed phrases of revolution. At that time, revolutionary ballads of the naivest kind, all about proletarian brotherhood and the wickedness of Mussolini, were being sold on the streets for a few centimes each. I've often seen an illiterate militiaman buy one of these ballads, laboriously spell out the words, and then, when he got the hang of it, begin singing it to an appropriate tune. All this time I was at the Lenin barracks, ostensibly in training for the front. When I joined the militia, I had been told that I should be sent to the front the next day, but in fact I had to wait while a fresh centuria was got ready. The workers' militias, hurriedly raised by the trade unions at the beginning of the war, had not yet been organised on an ordinary army basis. The units of command were the section of about 30 men, the centuria of about 100 men, and the column, which in practice meant any large number of men. The Lenin barracks was a block of splendid stone buildings with a riding school and enormous cobbled courtyards. It had been a cavalry barracks and had been captured during the July fighting. My centuria slept in one of the stables under the stone mangers where the names of the cavalry charges were still inscribed. All the horses had been seized and sent to the front. The whole place still smelt of horse piss and rotten oats. I was at the barracks about a week. Chiefly, I remember the horsey smells, the quavering bugle calls. All our buglers were amateurs. I first learned the Spanish bugle calls by listening to them outside the fascist lines. The tramp, tramp of hobnailed boots in the barrack yard, the long morning parades in the wintry sunshine, the wild games of football 50 a side in the gravelled riding school. There are perhaps 1,000 men at the barracks, and a score or so of women, apart from the militiamen's wives who did the cooking. There were still women serving in the militias, though not very many. In the early battles they had fought side by side with the men as a matter of course. It is a thing that seems natural in time of revolution. Ideas were changing already, however. The militiamen had to be kept out of the riding school while the women were drilling there, because they laughed at the women and put them off. A few months earlier, no one would have seen anything comic in a woman handling a gun.